We all want a business like Netflix or Amazon Prime. Businesses where once a customer engages with them, it becomes automatic and a part of their lifestyle from then on. But how do you build that forever transaction? I'm Robbie Kelman Baxter, and I have been studying subscription and membership models for nearly 20 years. In this podcast, my guests and I share the secrets and strategies of the membership economy. Join us for Subscription Stories, True Tales from the Trenches. What do you do when powerful tailwinds change to headwinds as you're growing your business? Many membership economy businesses have struggled to keep up momentum in the past few years as the golden era of growth has evolved to a bottom line era. Today's guest, Elin Tan, took the helm at Blue Movement, offering subscriptions to Bosch appliances in Europe during the bottom line era. In our conversation, we discussed how they balance circularity and sustainability with profitability. Listen to learn how they've built support across the organization, developed the right culture, and continued to evolve the offering to respond to changing customer needs. Elin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Robbie.
I'm so glad you're here. So I wanted to start by just having you share with our listeners how you came to lead Bosch's subscription initiative.
So I'm almost 21 years at Bosch. So I'm with the BSH Home Appliance Group, and I've been leading innovations, turning businesses around for the company, growing businesses for the company in different regions. And of late, I'm really into sustainability topics, right? So when they needed to look for somebody new to turn the business around, which is somewhat 4 or 5 years old, when I inherited it, it was quite a nice fit, both a pull-push topic for me to inherit this new baby for me.
Yeah, so a turnaround. Tell me a little bit what your model is and what they needed you to do. Kind of bring us up to the moment when you joined. What was happening and what did they ask you specifically to do? What were the goals at that time?
Yeah. So basically, Blue Movement is the circular model that we have. It's the subscription rental / subscription business of BSH. So BSH used to stand for Bosch and Siemens Home Appliances. Now it's wholly owned by Bosch for quite a few years now. And on the trend of as a service, usership instead of ownership, whether it be from the content world like Netflix to more durable goods like ours, home appliances, this is in fact the trend that we are leveraging on, right? So, and when Blue Movement was born end of 2017, we wanted to learn how we can also strengthen our business in the space of a subscription. And one of the more important reasons for existence at that time is also the element of a circular model. That means we would bring our appliances to our consumers like yourself, and instead of buying a washing machine, you would rent a washing machine from us. And we would still, as the manufacturer, own the product. And perhaps after 2-3 years, your life has changed or you want to upgrade to a new model, we take back the washing machine from you, we refurbish it, and we bring it to second life, to your neighbor, perhaps, right? So this was the model. And it was obviously a test and learn phase, and it was very important how we can make this whole dream work. It is unfortunately a fact that the rental business model is not the easiest from the financial point of view. Cash flow, capital expenses, non-payment. If you stop paying after 6 months, what happens with the bad debt, et cetera, and of course, the growth. Everyone, when you're working in innovation, you're always hoping that the hockey stick will come sooner than later, right? So what is your value proposition? What is your operating model to make it viable for the company to do this in the longer run? All came to be questioned, right? And therefore, that was actually my mandate, to take a look at how things are run and how we can actually turn the business around, yet fulfilling this goal of finding new consumers, new customers for BSH, for Bosch, but doing it in a viable way. So with a profitable bottom line and growing profitably as well, right? So that was my mandate to do. So super easy, right?
Easy peasy. Yeah. And where does Blue Movement operate, just for our listeners?
Yes. So we're now in two countries. So we started in the Netherlands, and I think you're quite familiar with Europe. So the topic of circularity and sustainability is quite prominent in the minds of the Dutch consumer. So there it was, the birthplace actually. And then it was such a nice, interesting model and business opportunity that we took it over that time before I even came into this space to the headquarters. And we are Bosch. Our headquarters is in Munich. So now the second country since 2021 is Germany. I'm happy to say, though, with our new approach, we are also seeing the opportunity to go to further countries, because as the trend is global, whether it's subscription or as a service across industries, and therefore we really believe that now we have a model that we can truly capture the hearts of consumers and customers across the world. So we will scale as well beyond these two countries.
I know we spoke a few weeks ago, and one of the things that I found really interesting is there are really a lot of different value propositions for consumers with this model. So it's more environmentally sound, but it also helps. I mean, you mentioned that you have capitalization and cash flow issues on your side, but for the consumer, renting is much easier. There's less repairs. You don't have to be responsible for taking care of your big appliance. You have a lot of different value propositions that you could put forward. But I know that sometimes the more value propositions you put forward, the more confused the consumer is. So how do you think about positioning it, especially across different markets and different segments of different markets, where there are maybe different sense of what denotes value?
Yeah. So it's interesting that you started with the topic of sustainability, because in fact, that was one of the main reasons, besides this annual recurring revenue and continuous relationship forever promise with the consumer. But sustainability was also one of the reasons for existence for Blue Movement, and we are a corporate startup. But the promise is service and convenience directly from Bosch. That means, in other words, the appliance, the products, so the washing machine, the ovens, that's just like the bridge, right? But at the end of the day, it's not like a status symbol to have the sexiest washing machine, but rather you want clean clothes, right? You want to always have clean clothes, and everything around it, we are taking care of that for you. So the vision is truly like, okay, if you want clean clothes, you have an excellent, reliable washing machine, which could potentially also be, you can switch it on and off, connect it, and everything taken care of. And in that monthly price, should it ever break down, Bosch hardly breaks down. It's also in the price for us to come and repair and replace parts. And in the future also, you don't have to worry about ordering your detergent. It's also part of that monthly fee. So the service and convenience around the entire job to be done of having clean clothes, yeah. Hopefully in the future, we also do partnering with energy companies, right? So everything is in it, right? Because you obviously need electricity to run your home appliances, right? So that is the general idea. Service and flexibility, everything for you, directly from the manufacturer who knows the appliance the best, right? So that's actually the promise. And we continuously learn what else can we do for you to make your life more enjoyable. And that is the case that continue to learn and potentially can bring you as digital use cases. So you don't even have to change the machine, but should you want to, you can upgrade with us. We'll take it back, refurbish it, and bring it to the next consumer. So we are also being like, rest assured, we are taking care of the planet as well while you're doing this.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought up the point that people don't want a cool washing machine. They want clean clothes. One of the things that I've found with many organizations is they start their business because they know people want clean clothes or whatever the outcome is, the ongoing outcome. And then they become really attached to their awesome products. And then the example that I sometimes share is, I spoke a few years ago at the International Car Wash Association, right? And I tried to make the point, which was not well received at the time, that nobody wants to go to the car wash, even if it's 2 minutes faster than the car wash down the street. What they want is their car to magically be clean. In fact, if little fairies came at night and cleaned your car for you, that would be ideal, because then you don't have to bring it anywhere and you don't have to wait even 8 minutes, even 6 minutes. And it's that mindset, I think, that often can unlock the power of a subscription. Because then, as you said, now you're blending in, it's not just about the machine, it's about the detergent, it's about the
electricity, it's the digital use cases.
Another conference that I spoke on was the conference for detergents. Your oil, I think it's called AOCS, A-O-C-S. And that was also, we talked about that a lot, about how do you ensure that somebody, everything in someone's closet is clean and ready to go? And what kinds of possibilities emerge when you look through that lens?
Exactly. And I mean, I really believe in this close relationship with the consumer so that we can continuously find out how her needs and wants evolve through time. And then we, as appliance manufacturers, developers who are really good at that, and maybe even obsessively so, may not be the ones who are the best to bring the best detergent, etc. Therefore, I believe in the power of partnering. First, to understand how we can create value, and then to see which company, and there are so many companies out there, whether it be boys and girls like Bosch or even startups, right? And then if we can truly partner up along the value chain, then we can create the maximum value and capture the maximum value too as a partnership. So I really believe in the power of partnering.
Power of partnering. I saw that on your LinkedIn feed, Pop. I'm going to start using it. I love that. The power of partnerships.
Yes, exactly. Right. So, and I think that's also a mind shift change from, to your point, appliance, as well as we have to do everything ourselves. I think those two mind shift changes necessary to be nimble and continuously innovate and not be, to your point, too bogged down by defending what we think is our competence. We need to continuously innovate.
So I want to go into this area. I've had many, many guests on the show who are just pure subscription, right? They've been subscription from the beginning. A lot of them are in software, media, even retail memberships like what Amazon Prime does. It's all software. There's no physical product. But Bosch has a proud history in manufacturing. And a lot of what you're doing depends on software, on finance, on doing things a little bit differently. How do you navigate that? And I know you've mentioned you've been with the company for quite a long time, which I believe is probably a great asset in this kind of a role where you're driving change and new business models, new ways of engaging with customers. How has this model, what have you done internally to make this model successful? And how do you think, if at all, this model is changing the way your peers across the organization think about what your mission is?
The Blue Movement step starts already after the gate, after the factory, right? So after the oven is produced from the factory, right? But the whole value chain of BSH and Bosch is from the raw materials, talking to our suppliers and designing the product, designing the refrigerator. And if we can design the refrigerator to be fit for repairability, right? And modular, right? Then when we talk about bringing it to the consumer and bringing it back, refurbishing it, it would be already so much easier to just change over that part, which is from wear and tear, a little bit kaput, or if it is necessary to perk up the brain of the machine, etc., right? For the performance to still make the durability and the lifetime of the appliance longer. We truly can then have the competence to see through from cradle to cradle and have better impact on, or lower impact on, emissions and resource use, right? So that's how we can truly make the difference. I mean, to be honest, more than 90% of our business is still, we manufacture, but then our partners sell, right? Retail. So, and we are doing now more and more direct to consumer to learn more and more how she thinks and what she needs. But at the same time, when we are also in models like Blue Movement's business model, we are able to truly connect the dots, even see how the consumers are truly using our appliances, doing remote diagnostics. And by that, on the software element, so far I've mentioned the modular design, but we're talking also about what kind of software, such that even if your machine doesn't change, by understanding that you want an oven that can automatically choose the program for you when you put in your pizza, right? So you just have to say, I want it crusty, and it even knows it already because it knows Robbie wants her pizza crusty. It will automatically do everything for you. And through the software updates, we are able to, in the future, give you your better enjoyment of your oven or your pizza, talking about the service behind, without even having you to buy a new one or rent a new one.
Tesla was one of the companies that sort of, whatever you may think about their leadership at this current moment and some of the challenges they're going through, I think one of the big innovations that they had is they kind of started with the software and thought about, how do we build the car so that we can continue to update it? That you don't have to wait until you buy the next model, but there's actually room for the same kind of upgrades that you enjoy on your computer or your phone.
That's exactly the point. And that's why you talked about, so SAS, right? They don't have the physical products, but we could potentially partner up in order to make the experience of the consumers so much more delightful, right? So that's exactly the point, right? So it's truly cradle to cradle, end to end, beyond the hardware, beyond the software, truly holistic as an experience, right? So I mentioned the word service, 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 but for the consumer is the experience that we're selling.
Yeah. I mean, you brought up a bunch of, I think, important points. One of them, you mentioned that you still, most of your products, you still sell through retailers, through third parties, which is honestly true of most manufacturers of most products, and often changing the business model to an as-a-service model or to a subscription model requires at least some direct to consumer interaction, whether that's just to learn or whether you're actually selling product directly. It's often a new muscle for the organization, this consumer research. And it's also about balancing the big business from the future business. And I know you've done a lot of work in innovation, in new products and new divisions and turnarounds within Bosch, Blue Movement being the latest part of the company that you're leading. What guidance do you have for others who are in big organizations that have traditions of success doing things the way they've always done them? When you're leading a tiny initiative that could be very strategically important, not just for the revenue, but also, I mean, I'm sure you're learning from the consumer, from cradle to cradle, knowing her whole journey, is valuable for everybody in the organization who historically have not had that same level of access to information.
Yeah. So I always like to call myself as an intrapreneur, right? So, and the joke is that I just don't have the guts to use my own money for the fun, no. But basically, I think there is a lot of overlap in the skill set and mindset between an entrepreneur and an intrapreneur. But an intrapreneur needs to understand how this future-proof innovative idea, whether it's a product innovation or a software or a business model innovation, can strengthen the corporate, the big company, the big ship, in the long run, right? So the fit, because I can't choose something like, oh, rocket science or some other topic which has nothing to do with home appliances, that would be very ill-fitting, right? So it's got to pay into the corporate strategy. And being a company person, you would understand the strengths because you do your SWOT and you know the threats that you're facing. So you know that you need to change, right? And yet you've got your heavy load of the tanker that has all the reason for you to defend your strengths, but also maybe the hurdles of being nimble and daring to fail. So the organization also has to have different focus points and different budgets and different people, because the moment you have the same budget and same people doing business as usual that pays our salaries and those that probably need to use money before they can make money, then you will have a setup for failure, right? So a different buckets of people, also different mindsets, because we need to continuously say, hey, failure is the only option to learn, because you never know what will happen until you try. And this whole mindset shift, skill set shift, and the whole way of working is very important whether you fail or succeed, which also means that if you truly believe in a certain innovation, then it's got to have top management attention. If not, it's not going to live very long, because the moment it is subjected to budget constraints and prioritization, it's very easy to say whether the business as usual that pays your salary gets the budget or this business that burns money, right? So yeah, and how it's going to support the company in the longer run has to continuously make sense for the bigger picture.
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny, side note, I'm just updating a course I developed for LinkedIn Learning on being an entrepreneur, entrepreneurship inside the company, which is, it's such an important skill. And I think it's sort of understudied and underappreciated because, I mean, you were being modest and saying, well, I don't want to take the risk of my own money. But the other part of it is trying to do something entrepreneurial within a large company can actually be harder than doing it on your own because you have so many constituents to answer to.
But I don't think it's easier as an entrepreneur, right? So, but the entrepreneur needs to know how to win the internal stakeholders as well. And oftentimes, if you're the new topic, right, we may not be the new kid, right? 20 years in the company, but you are always fighting for something not business as usual, right? And therefore, how to not be labeled the distractor, the troublemaker, the one taking the resource and attention is super important. Therefore, they need to find the win-win, right? Or basically to at least find, I'm a big fan of not just, you need to have a vision and strategy first, right? That fits into the bigger picture of the corporate vision and strategy. And then you need to see how it's going to be realized. So you need proof of concepts, you need your little pilots, you need your little tests and your little successes in order to then show and not just say blah, blah, to really show that, hey, it's truly adding value for our big company together. And then gain more and more support along the way, because without this support, like for example, if I were to try to make my little speedboat, so we call ourselves a little speedboat, right? 10 times. So of course I dream big, right? So I'm like 10X, right? So if I were to try to make my little speedboat 10X, it would mean that I would need so much more resources in software developers, in operationalizing it, in the sales and marketing touch points to reach the consumers. And why should I do that when Bosch, as the tanker, has already so much power in the operations as well as in the touch points, in the sales and marketing, customer service, etc. And therefore, in my mind, it's like for us to understand in which context do we do what, right? So when we talk about scaling, then we should use the strength. So to understand which are the strengths you should play with and which are the areas that you better try to do it in a small scale where you have control. For example, if you want to change, just being dramatic, a typo on the web shop. If you were to do it in the big tanker, you would probably have to do an IT ticket and wait for your turn for someone to change it for you. So just being dramatic, right? So black and white's it. So to understand who are your internal stakeholders, how to win them, when to get in touch with them, I think it's also important. And also which strengths and gaps to fill in at which point of time, right?
So I have a question for you. I've been thinking a lot about entrepreneurship inside the company and how important or whether it's important to have credibility in that organization before you take on a major new initiative that requires a lot of support. In what ways, if at all, do you believe that it's helped you to have worked across the organization in different regions, different product lines? And to what extent, if any, are you calling on those old pals, old relationships to kind of grease the wheels and make it easier for your nascent business to grow?
Yeah. So the simple answer is this is really important, right? So, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel very blessed that I also come from engineering and I worked in the technical line, product line management, factory planning and everything before going into business and innovation, right? So because if I do need anyone to adjust something on the product side, they can't pull a fast one on me. And similarly, on the business side, I have seen how it is in the market. So I'm not the headquarter lady, right? So I've seen how it really happens in the real world, in the consumer's home, and talk to customers and build relationships and partnerships with, yeah, customers, manufacturers, and everything. So this bandwidth is really very important, and knowing who to call and who to spar with and who to gain as a champion is so important. So I feel very thankful that I do have the people to call, and they always make time for me. So that is part and parcel, because at the end of the day, in a big company or a small company, to be honest, it's not the facts that win the day, right? It's the people, and it's who you partner up with to make the crazy dream and the impossible come true, right? So,
yeah, I personally think that having credibility in the organization is such an advantage in entrepreneurship. I've seen several, we've talked about it on the show, several really skilled, experienced subscription people go to a different company and be blindsided by people don't take my calls. They don't trust me. I forget the words you use, but they think I'm the bad guy. And I think that's one issue. The other one that you brought up that I think is really important is you've said several times now, you keep tying it back to the corporate goals. You keep showing how everything aligns, how we're all going in the same direction. And I think that can be exhausting when you think, I just talked to a division leader who was like, isn't that obvious that if the company put this division in place and put me at the top of it and gave me resources that it's important? But you have to keep reminding people and showing them how the pieces fit together. And that can be exhausting.
Yeah. So, I mean, you cannot be an entrepreneur or an intrapreneur if you're not resilient, right? And I think you need a little bit of a masochistic thing in you that you like pain. You are so driven by the sense of achievement of doing something pioneering that will make sense for the bigger picture. And I think at the end of the day, we have all lived through this, right? So it's a matter of, I mean, living through also when the leadership changes, right? So the board of management changes, the division head changes, your fellow stakeholders in the other functions change, and you continuously have to repeat the story and strengthen the story. And I wouldn't say repeat the story, because I constantly think that we need to pivot. So the story gets stronger and the story gets adjusted to the time. So constantly being ahead of it, I always say 5 steps ahead of everyone else. I think that's really important, because if they see that you truly make sense, and it's not just tying it to the bigger picture of the corporate, but to also your stakeholder, if it's the next function, your stakeholder's agenda. And if you can't do that, you can't find that win-win, right? And how can you win him? So it's like, okay, you may be interesting for sustainability, but what's in it for me, right? So this connecting the dots, whether it's partnering internal stakeholders or partnering external partners, right? This is key. And that's the same for the consumer, right? You're not in it to get as much money from the consumer as you can. You're in it to delight the consumer, have her engage in such a wonderful experience that it's a joy for her to be in this partnership with you. So whether it's an internal stakeholder, external partner, or a consumer or a customer, it's all the same, right? To really empathize how to find a win-win. So I see it like that. It's definitely, you need to find joy in that. And I had to learn it too, Robbie. So because engineer, facts and figures, right? And I knew I always enjoyed people, but I always thought, oh my God, that's a waste of time. I have to work, right? So hardworking Asian as I am, right? Workaholic. And then in the end, why do I deprive myself of this joy of connecting with people, learning from them, and understanding how we can partner up and create something cool? So this is, in the end, I allow myself to enjoy it. And it's in fact one of the key factors why I think I'm a reasonable, successful entrepreneur, to your point, right? This is so key, the key success factor.
Yeah. Well, let's talk briefly about your success. How is Blue Movement doing? How has the growth been? What are some of the milestones that you're particularly proud of?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was funny because when I was earlier months of my time with Blue Movement, I was drawing this mountain and then saying, okay, we want to go up 10x, 20x. And where are we now, right? Are we at the 0.1%? Are we halfway there? And then Bon Jovi song, halfway there and all that, right? But I truly believe we're like 1% or less, right? Because this is such a new world, right? And that's, for me, such an exciting thing, right? So we are still pioneers, even 7 years down the road. because it's still so new, yeah, to our durable goods appliance world, but it will become a norm in the long run. So for me, this whole finding out what great potential is not just a dream, but truly a data founded is really the first thing, right? And then, of course, to say, okay, how are we going to make it work in the markets that we already are in? The turning around part, changing the business model, finding partners that truly are the right ones for us. What is our value proposition to begin with? Who are our target consumers? But not only consumers, the sales channel of going B2B, so business to business. And that's also something I'm really proud of, because when you want to try to change, if you go to business to business, that comes from the, let's say, business partnering part. And from that viewpoint, your target group of which business partners or which business channels you go to is also very important. And they could potentially help you convince the Robbie Baxter or the Max Müller end consumer, because the end consumer is from the innovation, let's say, uptick, is a little bit slower than the more innovative business players, right? So those are the milestones. And where we are right now is basically also opening the B2B space, clarifying who and why we're in this game, not just why for the consumer and the customer, but also why for the company has changed, right? And then also going forward, which are the new markets to capture, right? And to win. So the business model part is also another critical factor, because if we are not able to do it right in the existing markets, how can we scale, right? We don't want to scale and go to new markets with the wrong thing. And the CEOs will just kill me for one. So talking about, they are my internal stakeholders as well as partners in crime. And therefore, those are the critical milestones that I'm really proud of so far. But we are really just below 1% of where we want to be. So it's very exciting.
So I wanted to ask you, are there other companies that have analogous models that you look at or even talk to say, let's see how they're doing it, or let's explore different options that we have that other people have already, paths other people have forged? Or do you feel like we're so unique that everything for Bosch and everything for Blue Movement is de novo from scratch, starting with a clean slate?
I don't like to be alone, right? So I like, if within the industry of home appliances, there were a couple of players, and there is a huge player, LG in Asia, they are doing extremely well and aggressively expanding their rental and subscription model, right? But looking, I always look beyond the industry, right? So, and I think that when I like to play in blue ocean, so if you're in a red ocean, then you're oftentimes on price. You have price wars and all that, right? And who's a little bit faster, who's a little bit cheaper. But when we're in a blue ocean, a new space, then we might be new in our industry for this, but just among the few players. But in the end, you have been in this space forever. Yeah, so we can learn a lot about how others are doing membership economy, because it's also going like the Bosch Club, right? If you want a new appliance, you can always get from us. We will make sure that your machine goes to the next person. So it can also be in that way that I learn. So of course, because ours is a product as a service, I try to learn from product as a service companies first. And the easiest way is car leasing. I mean, they are hundreds of years old. And at the end of the day, earlier on, everybody would say, I buy a car. And that's a status symbol, right? Why should I lease a car? But now everybody says, oh, because I don't have to worry about repair. I get the latest model, etc. And it's actually almost a parallel. So whether it's how Six does it, the car rental, they have so many different models, and or whether how even, you know, now we're talking about leasing instead of just rental, and how production equipment manufacturing is using leasing for the longest time, right? Sell and lease back and stuff like that. So these are the different business models, but also how they do the customer success elements, the forever promise, and what other additional services beyond the initial package that could be interesting is obviously whether it's Amazon Prime or whatever. There's so much to be learned. And I think that I take inspiration from various industries and various parts of the value chain, right? So not just the product side, but also the whole consumer lifetime value, customer engagement side, and really globally, right? So I think that in the end, it's about seeing what, taking impulses to and see what you can copy and adapt for your use, right? So that's how I try to approach it. So I don't feel so lonely.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, it's so funny because a lot of organizations think they're so unique. And they are, to a certain extent. The products are different. The history is different. The culture is different. But at the end of the day, when you're offering someone a subscription, it means to move the alignment from ownership to access. And it gives you the freedom to think about outcome rather than just the moment of transaction, the sale, that's the value. And automotive, computer, even the wearables now, I'm pointing at my old school watch, but the different kinds of devices that can track your health. I wear an Oura ring. I mean, these are all product as a service offerings with different ideas about whether how you own the physical product, how you subscribe to the services, whether there are add-ons. There's lots of great models out there. So it's great that you're using those and talking to them. I think that's really, really important.
Yes. And Robbie, that's why I feel so thankful that you reached out, because I really believe in the power of community, not to mention that you are an expert and I'm just a newbie, right? I'm so grateful that the other practitioners in this area have also built some communities, and I try to latch on and also try to give value from my end and in my experience. And when we share all these experiences, we're like, oh my God, how did you solve that problem, right? And I think in the end, we face similar challenges, maybe at different phases in our life cycle, if you will, or our life or our journey, and maybe in a slightly different context. But the general line that joins us all is the subscription, is the continuous relationship and not just transactional, right? And then, of course, my side is a little bit on the circularity additionally, but to your point, it's not always with that element. But that consumer recurring relationship, I think, is one of the things that bond us. And coming from that linear, recurring, continuous mode, I think, is the part that links us all up together quite nicely.
Yeah. Oh, beautifully said. I have a lot more questions, but we're running short on time. So I'm going to just ask you, if you have a chance, are you willing to do a speed round?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know whether I'm fit for that, but let's do it.
Okay. The first subscription you remember having?
Oh, gosh. Milk in Malaysia, back home.
Your favorite subscription today, not including Blue Movement?
Amazon Prime.
If you're given a choice, growth or turnaround?
Both. I'm a coward.
Most surprising difference in business culture across the many continents where you've worked?
So top-down control and, so democracy. Yeah, but I loved India because I learned there that you need to spark the vision and then just let it go. If not, you will have a lot of white hair and let the team just reach the goal. And in the end, it really released me of any too close management, because if you do micromanagement, the best thing that the team can reach is where you wanted them to. But if you inspire them for the vision and let go, you can reach even higher than what you as a leader thought. So that was an amazing lesson learned for me.
Amazing. And then a housekeeping hack that you've learned at Bosch.
Get a weekly person on 2 feet to come in.
Let them use all the good equipment, right? Oh, gosh. Elin Tan, thank you so much for being a guest on Subscription Stories. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much. I enjoyed every moment.
That was Elin Tan, Global Head of Blue Movement by Bosch. For more about Blue Movement, go to www.bluemovement.com. And for more about Subscription Stories, as well as a transcript of my conversation with Elin, go to robbiekelmanbaxter.com/podcast. Also, I got a favor to ask. If you like what you heard, please take a minute to go over to Apple Podcasts or Apple iTunes and leave a review. Mention Elin and this episode if you especially enjoyed it. Reviews are how listeners find our podcast, and we really appreciate each and every one. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening to Subscription Stories. Thank you.